guten Mittag, guten Abend. Mein Name ist Tanja van Bergen. Ich bin Geschäftsführerin an die holländische Seite von denselben Verein wie Netzwerkrecherche. Und ja, ich rede Deutsch, aber nicht so ganz gut, dass ich diesen Session in Deutsch machen werde. Ich habe Zustimmung, um das in Englisch zu machen. So we're going to talk English. All right. Good afternoon. I'd like to see some hands, please. Any one of you who has ever applied for funding? One, two, just two of you. Okay, because that's what we're talking about here. Funding, how to get extra money to do your job, to do the job you want to do this terrific project that you always wanted to do but couldn't find the financing for. I'm talking today with, and I need glasses as well, I'm both verbally handicapped as visually handicapped, Christoph Behrens, redacteur, and I made my notes in German. This is going to be a mess. I'm sorry about that. Redakteur Süddeutsche Zeitung online, I understood. And the other note is, where are you? I know your name, but I'm afraid I'm going to make a mistake. Philipp, how do you say that of Deutsch? Hummel?
Hummel.
Hummel. Okay,
it's Hummel. It's bumblebee, the German word for bumblebee.
Ah, bumblebee. Okay. I can't even remember the Dutch word at this moment for bumblebee, but good. You work with Welt am Sonntag, only just recently, I understood, and both of you have applied for funding in one way or another, in very different ways, which is always nice for a discussion because you won't be repeating the same thing over and over. Could you maybe just move back a little, so I can see? Yes, great. Otherwise, I can't see Philip. But we're going to start with Christoph. Christoph, you applied and you got a grant from the Medienbotschafterprogramm der Robert Bosch Stiftung. And that was from April to June 2015. And maybe you can explain in pretty short time what that is and what made you apply for it.
So the Media Ambassadors Program is basically a grant for reporting about China, to go to China and report about different topics. And basically the idea is that every year a group of journalists goes to China and that and a little later Chinese journalists go to Germany and have an organized program here. And in China, basically what you do is you have like an introduction to politics and economics and culture also at the university in Beijing. Then you have like time for reporting your own stories, for doing own research, and then the last month is working at the Chinese media company.
Okay, and what made you decide that you wanted to do that?
Basically, I was just curious. I hadn't really, I had never been to China, and I also hadn't reported a lot about the country. So it was just like an adventure, and just to try it out.
Mm-hmm. So you applied. You told me that eight of you got a grant, a scholarship, whatever you name it. Eight of you went to China. And then could you just, because it was a big change, going from Germany to China is not like going to France for a week. That's quite different. What did you find there?
Well, of course, the biggest challenge is the language. That's a really big barrier also to reporting, but also in daily life. And for instance, for traveling, it's a barrier, and for making interviews, and not just the language, but also the different culture, how you approach people, and how you start reporting and start following with a story. That's quite different, and of course, it's a whole other size, so it's much bigger. The cities,
you were in Beijing.
Distances in Beijing most of the time. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you lived there together with other students. You had arranged for accommodation through the internet, I understood?
It was a shared flat, yeah.
Yes, okay. So the first month you had colleges in university. Can you explain a bit about that? What was it about? What did they...
Well, basically, it was a very good introduction to what was happening in the country at the moment and why. So, what political processes were taking place at the time, and also the economic situation of China, the slowdown of the economy that was happening at that time, and. But also the culture, the different way, and I must say the lecturers, they were really good. They were mostly Chinese, and many had been abroad for studying. So, and they talked quite openly, and also the journalists that we met, and that surprised me a lot.
Yeah, I was about to say that was not what you had expected.
You mean the journalists?
That they were so open.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't expect too much, but of course, I didn't think that it was so differentiated. So maybe in the West we have this feeling that in a dictatorship or in an authoritarian state, like everyone is really sticks to themselves and not very open. But that was not the case. It was quite a dynamic society, actually, and people are really eager to talk to foreigners also, and especially the journalists, they are very interested in talking
you,
to
you
others.
Found as well that the whole media landscape in China was much more diverse than you originally thought. Could you elaborate a bit more on that?
Yeah, sure. So of course in the West we tend to think that the censorship makes reporting impossible, or that it's basically all the same, just the position of the state. And but actually, you find quite a big spectrum at work in China. So of course, you have these state media companies reporting the official line. But you also have a lot of independent media companies, I would say, or really brave investigative journalists really doing a great job navigating this difficult terrain. And it's not like they are told what to publish, but of course it can happen that, and it does happen a lot, that their stories get deleted afterwards on the internet.
Mm. There's, you said, a gray zone and there's the red line.
Mm.
What's the gray zone and what is the red line?
The gray zone, I would say that's the area that you can report about, but you have to be maybe careful. So that would maybe be environmental problems, for instance. So you can report about that as a Chinese journalist. And you can also criticize things, but of course it can also happen that that there will be problems afterwards. For example, that the story must be deleted, or it's not allowed to talk about it on social media, for instance. And the red line, that would be something that you can't do, like, for example, talk about the autonomy of Tibet, or about the Dalai Lama, or also about the Secretary General Xi Jinping.
And you did your own investigation there, and you wrote about it, and you even won prizes with it. We're going to get to that later, but you did an internship, ein Praktikum, sagt ihr, glaube ich, at the financial Xinjiang. Caixin. It was a very respected and specialized economic financial magazine, and you were intern. There, did you write anything? Did they publish you in Chinese, translated?
No, they didn't publish me. I found it very, very hard to keep up with them, because they were really doing a great job, and I was just not at that point to know the Chinese economy well enough to write about it from an outsider's perspective. But still, it was very interesting just to watch and observe also Chinese journalists in general.
Mm-hmm. Have you still got many contacts with Chinese colleagues that you met over there, or maybe colleagues that afterwards came to Germany, because it's the other way around as well? Chinese colleagues come to Germany for 3 months to experience what you experienced there. Is there some sort of a network that is growing because of this exchange of people?
Well, this has been going on for 9 years now, and I would say there's some sort of permanent network now. And also some stayed in China as correspondents, some alumni of the program. And yes, there were also Chinese journalists visiting Germany. One I was going to Oktoberfest with, that was very, very funny. And I still have the contacts on my phone. So everyone in China uses WeChat. And it's quite easy, actually, to get in touch with them again. I mean, I don't talk with them on a daily basis, but if you need help with a story, it's actually quite easy through technology.
And do your colleagues at the Süddeutsche know that? Do they use you now when they need specific information on Chinese subjects?
I wouldn't say necessarily that they use me or ask me as an expert, but of course I try to. I try to follow up on the subjects that I came across, mostly environment and energy. But of course, it's very dynamic, so you have to read a lot and keep up with it all the time.
Okay, you would have to be a specialist on China yourself to be able to grasp that country, maybe. Are there any questions so far? No, okay, which is not unusual, but you'll get there. I'm sorry, I'm messing up things here. So, I got. I'd like to switch to Philippe now. We'll be getting back to the actual journalistic work that Philippe has done, that Christophe has done, and that has given him prizes as well. But let's switch to Philippe first. You work at Welt am Welt am Sonntag, we already said that, and you applied, you did not apply yourself, but you got someone to do it for you, which is very, very smart, I can tell you. Somebody in a group that you worked with applied for money from the Journalism Fund EU, we should say. How did you, the four of you, decide to go for money there?
Well, actually, we were a group of four European journalists, me, then Michele Catanzaro, a guy from Italy living in Barcelona, Astrid Viziano, who lived in Paris by the time, but she's half German and half Spanish, and Elisabetta Tola, who's also Italian. Michele came up with the idea. He had done a documentary about problems in speech analysis in the forensic way, so when people, like for example, drug traffickers are intercepted on the phone, you have records of a guy talking about a drug deal on the phone, and then you have somebody, a suspicious person, and you want to find out if that's the same person who you have intercepted on the phone to have proof that he is the drug dealer, so to say. And he did a documentary about it, and then the question came up from a scientific point of view, how good do these methods work in terms of identifying voice records and finding out who is behind it and who's the speaker. And that's when he asked me and the other two people to join him on the team to apply for this working grant. And he had everything set up more or less, so we just had to jump in and say yes, and that was kind of really comfortable for us. And so that was a big advantage for me to get the chance to apply for rather big chunk of money and not having to
How
do
much
so much in,
money?
In the first place. So that was really helpful, and I'm very glad that Michele did it, and I have to give big props to him again. He's the leader of the whole project, and he's done a terrific job.
You applied for how much in total?
We applied in the first grant, we applied for, I think, we got 7,000 euros, so roundabout. For the four of us for a project, which was set out to compare the different standards and how the European countries deal with this forensic speech analysis, as it's called, and to find out how the different polices use it. And also there's a cross-border aspect, of course. We're talking about a cross-border session here. Because you have a lot of people calling from one country to the other. For example, we found a guy who was calling from Macedonia to Bavaria, to a small town in Bavaria, and the call was intercepted, and he was later put in prison because he was supposed to be a drug dealer, but turned out they couldn't prove it. So there's cross-border everywhere around it, actually.
So you got 7,000 for that, and then for the next project, because it was two in total?
We got another 8,000 for another working grant later. We found out during our research that there's also speech analysis in refugee cases, asylum cases. And that was during the time when the refugee numbers in Germany increased incredibly in the summer. And we first thought we could do the whole, like, two things, like forensic speech analysis for crimes and asylum speaker analysis for detecting the origin of the people applying for asylum. We could do it in one big project, but then we found out it was kind of a lot stuff. So we applied for another working grant, and we got another 8,000 euros around. So in total, 15,000 euros, and I think we started in March of 2015 with the project. So, and the last publication was just in early October of this year in Süddeutsche Zeitung, actually. So we worked for 1.5 years, with 15,000 euros, which sounds a lot in the first moment. You hear it, 15,000, but it's really, it turned out not to be as much as it sounded to me in the beginning. Yeah.
Let's get back to the moment of applying again. Was it a lot of paperwork, and did you need to wait long before you got the money or the assurance that you would get the money? How does it go? Do you have to put yourself in a desk for a few days and write and write and write and explain everything?
I guess that's what Michaela did, actually. I didn't, but I got some information from Germany into the application, and Michaela finished it, actually. And you have kind of maybe 10, 12 pages that you have to fill out forms, write a proposal, write a working plan, like what you want to use your money for. You have to bring two letters of interest from editors that they will publish your results. So basically what you need is, what Journalism Fund EU says, what you need is an idea for an in-depth, more or less investigative research investigation with a cross-border aspect, and that's basically what we had, luckily. And Michaela did the rest.
You said earlier that you would have never applied if it would have been just you, because you're a freelancer. It would have taken you too much work.
I think so. Yes, like as if you're a freelancer, and I've been working as a freelancer until September for like 5-6 years. Takes you maybe 2-3 days at least for a proper application for a good big grant. So you can easily, as you're a freelancer, you're also a company by yourself in a way, you can calculate how much it costs you. It costs you maybe 200, 300, maybe more euros a day that you could earn if you would not apply but work instead. So it would cost you maybe 800, 1,000 euros to just apply, so to say. And with not knowing what the outcome will be, so there's not too big of a chance of being accepted later for the grant. So that's of course something that you calculate with if you in the situation that freelancers are in nowadays, at least in Germany.
Yeah, I understand. You said another interesting thing, and you said that getting the money, although it wasn't very much, it was about half of the money that you had to spend on the project, but it made you said, courageous. How did that work?
Of course, it's always nice, and it's kind of gives you confidence if you get accepted with your plan and with your project for a grant. But also, like, if you have the money in the first place, you have not the pressure of immediately turning results, so to say, which you can publish directly to get honorary. So you have this seemingly big amount of 7,000 euros, which, as I said, seemed more than it was in the end. But you have this money, and you can work for a couple of weeks, or like for some time at least, to just do research and just get into it and just dig up stuff that you find interesting. And that is kind of the freedom that it gives you, and also gives you courage in terms of not not having to worry that you will run out of money if you don't work for money directly for honoraries for 2, 3 or more weeks. Yeah, so that's how it worked for us, or for me at least. Yeah.
You got published, and well published. What would have happened if you didn't get publication? If the project would have failed, would you have to pay back the money, or?
I think from a legal point of view, probably we had a contract, and of course it said that we have to bring something back for the money, so we had these two letters of interest, and I think the least was to get these two publications out, and if that wouldn't have happened, probably we would have, from a legal point of view, had to pay something back, or all of it, I don't even know, but I don't know if that ever happens, actually. Maybe sometimes it can happen, but normally they choose so, like from a large amount of applications, they choose very few, which you can rely on that those people are responsible, and they also have to lose something for their own like reputation if they don't do it properly. So I think the chances of losing money or having to pay back or not getting a good result for the organizations are really low.
Would you advise people to go for this grant maybe alone, or what would it be the circumstances in which you would say, go for the money, try it?
First, you need a good idea, which is obviously that what you always need as a journalist, good ideas for projects, for stories. But once you have that, I think you need probably some approach that is not possible or would not be taken by someone else if it wasn't you, so to say. Like maybe some kind of style that you do, like it could be data journalism, it could be something else. Or just a topic that's not so sexy, so to say, not such a, like this speech forensic thing, it sounded very pretty and sexy in the end when we could show the results to Der Spiegel or Süddeutsche Zeitung or to other newspapers. But in the beginning, it sounds very complicated to normal journalists. Like, we are both science journalists, so we are not normal people. But when you have results and you have big cases, and we had a couple of big cases coming out, then you can sell it easily. But if you start with like from bottom up with an investigative thing that you just said the thesis are, there might be something going wrong, but you don't know what is going wrong, how big the problems are, and it's really hard to sell. But if you have confidence and some money to get into it, and you have the feeling that there is something that you can dig up, then you should maybe just try it. Yeah. And I did afterwards also, like after these two successful applications, I did another one which was not successful, unfortunately, which would have been even a bigger chunk, but it gave me so much confidence and so much trust in the procedure of applying that I did it again and put some work in it, and the work is not lost, which is what I know now, that when you apply and you dig up something, you can still do something with your idea and with your project. You can maybe not get a grant, but you can still make a story out of it, or further follow the research.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Questions? Anyone? Still no questions. Wow. It's late in the afternoon already as well. But we're going back to Christoph, because you you did your own journalistic work in China as well. It resulted in a few very, very beautiful stories. You should really read at least the first paragraph of his story on the Yellow River. It's beautiful, beautifully written. But you made that together with a Chinese journalist, Lu Yang. He helped you, and then not in the way that we used to use people in foreign countries. In Africa, we are very good European journalists as using people as fixers, but then they don't get any journalistic influence. We just use them as a sort of gophers. Can you get me that? Can you do this? Can you do that? You really had a collaboration with this Chinese journalist, didn't you? Can you tell something more about that? How did that go?
So basically when you work as a foreign journalist in China, you need always some kind of help from locals. And one story I was doing with a colleague of mine, Caroline von Eichhorn, and we used the platform Hostwriter to get in touch with local journalists for that. And at that time, two Chinese people were registered on Hostwriter, one in Beijing and one in Shanghai.
Does everyone here know Hostwriter? Do we know how it works, or should he explain a bit?
Yeah.
Please raise your hand if you could use some Extra, yes. I thought there would be someone.
I can say a few sentences.
How does it work? Just very quickly.
It's basically just a platform for connecting journalists. And the idea is that when you travel abroad or to another city, you contact a journalist who is living there and ask him for advice, or sometimes even to sleep on his couch, maybe. And I think that's especially good for when you're a young journalist and you don't have big amounts of money. And so this it's kind of a low entry barrier platform just to collaborate with others. And that's what we did, especially for a story about heavy metal in China. And so Lu Yang, he's also a freelance journalist in Shanghai, and actually he was very eager to work with us. So actually, before we even met him face to face, he had set up a meeting for us, and so we met him right there, just 5 minutes before the interview, and we didn't know him at all. But he translated for us, and just after that, we had lunch together and got to know him. So that shows in a way that I think many are really enthusiastic to work with us, and we made similar experiences in other cities as well.
Mm-hmm. You wrote about the heavy metal scene because it turned out that the apartment you were staying in, your neighbors were into heavy metal.
Yeah, actually, the people living there at the Airbnb, they were quite heavy metal fans, so they brought us onto the story. So it was kind of lucky for us to get onto that. But of course, after that, you need to get in touch with interview partners, and you need to go a bit deeper, of course.
Could you have done that without the help of Lu Yan, or did you really need him?
I think it was really important also for other stories. He helped us for other stories as well. And but I think it's not only the specific output, the specific story that comes out of it, but also like the network. I think for him it was really interesting to work with foreign journalists because, I mean, you have to remember that the media in China is also not easy to work in, and he's working at an app company now that programs apps, and for him it was like an opportunity to do something else and to really do other kinds of research. And it's also very interesting just to see a different line of thought and just to see a different media culture. So I think that can also be very useful in another way, on another level for Western journalists, just to see their working conditions.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I mean, for example, the whole social media in China is much more developed than in Germany, for instance. So there are, I think, now 600 or 700 million people on social media in China now. And there are lots of experiments going on. For example, on WeChat, which is basically the Chinese WhatsApp, but it's actually much more than that. So there's also many traditional media companies active there and producing content for that platform and being very successful with it, and also generating revenue with that kind of platform. And so also in terms of like business models, I think we can also learn a lot maybe.
It looks like you came out of China a bit more modest about Western society versus China. Am I correct? Did your views on China really change through this stay there?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I would say I learned a lot. I wouldn't say that it necessarily turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw that it's much more differentiated than black and white, and that there are a lot of journalists there working under really difficult conditions and really doing a great job.
Okay, Philip, what did you learn from working together with people from other countries? This international collaboration, what does it bring you?
Well, of course, if you have a team of four different people, you have four different personalities and four different ways of styles of working, and it's interesting to, there's always cliches about who works in a certain way, like Germans are very precise and correct and fact-based, maybe, and I don't know. Like, it was interesting to see how these cliches, in a way, were true and in a way they weren't, so, yeah. You have to arrange if you work with the other people technically that you share information. Like, we had a Google Drive thing, we had a WhatsApp group, we had an Evernote account that we thing that we used. So that's the one thing that you learn, how to really try to share information with other people who need to know the very important stuff, but not everything that you found out, and how to really transform that and in terms of somebody that you work together and share information with. Also interesting is the different media cultures also within Europe, I think, which it turned out, for example, to be pretty tough to sell our stories in France, which was partly maybe because we didn't have anybody with a real like French language native level, but also it was not easy to connect to the French media scene, so we couldn't. In the end, we didn't publish in France, even though Astrid who is now working at Süddeutsche Zeitung in the science department, also she was in Paris at the time, but she didn't manage to sell any story to the French media. So that was interesting, and also how differently they pay, and like it's interesting to see the differences, but also the things that you have in common. Yeah.
Do you work differently now because of that?
Normally nowadays I don't work in a team anymore so often. So that's, of course, then I work differently. But it changed our way of working, changed within the project, of course. So, for example, Michele is a guy who's collecting everything that he finds. And he's a guy, he has a PhD in physics, and he rather collects all information that he gets and puts it in a digital, stores it in a digital way that makes it searchable. So he put everything in the Evernote thing, and everything that he could find was in Evernote. And at some point, we lost track of what was important, what was new, and everything. Mm-hmm. For him, it was the way it worked. He made huge documents where he put like huge chunks of copied text in it, which can be a way of doing it, but it was different from my way of, for example. So we had at some point to find a common solution to share information and to share what's really important for the others, and also sharing the outcomes. Like, for example, it was good at our project was good that we had two native speakers of each country we published, each language we published in, to cross-check and to read the article. So Astrid could speak Spanish on a native level and German, so she could read my texts, and yeah, so we could make a kind of a round of reads of the edits of the text that we produced. Yeah.
Are you an advocate now at Welt und Welt am Sonntag to form groups of people or to start collaborating with media from other countries, maybe, if you have a good idea for a European story, an international story?
I think in everyday life it's really kind of difficult to establish, even within our company, teams and groups, because there's so much pressure, time pressure also, and people want the stories for their department. If you make it together, like if you as a science journalist work together with an economics journalist, for example, that you can put it in the economics part of the newspaper, but then the science part loses it, so to say, and loses also the time of the editor. So it's on the everyday real basis, on the ground, so to say. The idea is nice. I would like to do it much more. In the circumstances that most of us work under now, I think maybe there are some exceptions, like, I don't know what it's like at Süddeutsche Zeitung, if you have enough stuff for nice group collaborations. You can do the Panama Papers, but that's something very, very single thing.
Do you know, Christoph, has the Panama Papers changed the attitude at Süddeutsche to working together with other? I mean, after the Panama Papers, we got the Bahama Leaks, and according to Mark Abra, we ain't seen nothing yet. There will be more leaks, there will be more international cooperation. Do we need an organization like ICIJ to work together internationally? Or?
Unfortunately, I don't know too many details about the process of the publication of the Panama Papers, but I think that kind of collaboration, I think that's the future. And it showed a lot of my colleagues that this kind of thing and this kind of investing time into this big investigative story is really important, and it's also a good investment because, I mean, nowadays everything is globalized and every company is globalizing. So we as media, we need to think about that, and we need to do that also. Mm-hmm. I think that's really the only way.
Okay. Anyone here who has a very different opinion about this? Are we all convinced that international collaboration is the future, or is it just another hype that will end soon?
I think from my perspective, also other media companies have understood after the Panama Papers that it's necessary to collaborate. We've seen different collaboration networks coming up afterwards, and this was a really good process for the whole media branch.
Mm-hmm. And funding, is there anyone here who's against funding, who thinks you shouldn't accept money from Journalism Fund EU, let alone from anything that goes along with Soros? That you could ask questions about that. You could say, if you accept money, then you're sort of like a horse that's taken on a leash, and you have to be nice to the people that feed your hand. Yes? Shall we give you a mic? Because you're with the foundation that does the grant, yeah.
Foundation people, he's not here anymore.
Okay.
The Media Ambassador is funded by Bosch Foundation, and I'm the program director, so Christoph was with the program. And I mean, the funding, in one sense, for us, they are the scholarship holders, they're totally independent from us, their research. So they do their own work. Our task is they brought them there to let them free, you know, explore, forget them, China in this case, by themselves. So from my perspective, though, we will say we support the journalists and they do what they want to do. That's my understanding.
I understood from Christoph that the program as it is now has ended, that you will be coming back in this theater with a new program. It's got to be a little bit different. I can give you 2 minutes, so you have to be very short because otherwise it's late. But could you say something about it? What's the change?
Well, the change actually because the Chinese condition, political condition, is quite difficult for the foreign journalists to work there. So this is one of the biggest, and the other also the interest of the German journalists somehow shifted. So we have to think about what will be your needs. That's why I'm here, to hear what could be. So I think now we will think about something in the direction like the multinational cooperation, journalists working together, border crossing, and maybe some kind of co-working space to, you know, help you, give you some infrastructure if you want to work internationally with some subjects. But if you have better ideas, you're welcome to, you know, approach me. I would like to take your ideas.
I did not really get the next idea. Maybe.
The next idea is that because now what we'll do is like the German and Chinese, so it's like two nationwide. So we would like to do more Asia and Germany, probably a bit more European, you know, collaborations in
so
this
you
case.
So you can choose where you want to go. You can go to Thailand, you can
yes,
go to...
Yes, or Vietnam, or Japan, or Korea. This is our, like, you know, sort. We would like to support this kind of cooperation more multi-directed.
Christoph, do you think that's better than just China?
I don't know. I can't say anything about that, but... I mean, the whole region is changing very fast, the whole Asia-Pacific region, and I mean, of course, sometimes we live in a kind of a filter bubble here in Germany and just maybe see the German media landscape, but of course the media landscape in other places is changing as well, and basically When you talk to foreign journalists, recently I spoke to two journalists in Hong Kong, and basically they have also the same problems like we do, like bosses that want content with very, very many clicks instead of really quality content, and they were also complaining about that and how it's getting harder to get a full-time job. And so I think it makes sense to connect with them in order to understand these problems and also the similarities and other solutions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? No one here has a question for Philippe or Christoph. It's all very clear to you, and it's all very Friday afternoon and very late. Have we forgotten things? Should there be other things said about these topics? Nobody here has any doubts about the ethics, or would you accept money from any foundation to work?
What's the alternative? Not doing journalism.
You weren't in quite at the beginning. Have you applied already sometime to a... Have you had a grant, or have you applied... Where did you ask for money?
I'm a freelance journalist, and I'm also a founder of Hostwriter, so for me it was very beautiful, Christoph, to hear. He's not getting paid for doing advertisements, so thanks. No, like, I do both, like, I'm a founder, but I'm also a freelance journalist, and yes, of course, I mean, I think that's, like, probably for any freelance journalist, like, that's the ticket. You ask for a grant, you go somewhere, and then you do stories, because from the money that you get from the editors, it doesn't even cover the travel costs. So I think this that's been a reality for so, like, for me, like, when starting in the business, I have never seen it in any other way. Like, when people tell me we do get money for we do get money for travel, or, like, for me, I've never had that. And I mean, these days are kind of over, so I wonder what is the alternative. So almost any international story that I ever did was always based on foundation money. Sure.
Do you want an alternative, or are you okay with it?
Well, talking of journalism fund, I've not been funded by them yet. I like them a lot, but there, for example, I see it's a lot of bureaucracy. So I think it's just more work. I mean, it's not only selling your story to your editors, but on top of that, you are also independency of your founders. So it's yet another report to write. So I do find it difficult and a lot of more work, but I just don't see the alternative. I don't know, like, crowdfunding maybe, but that's a lot of work too.
Philip, did you feel dependent on Journalism EU, Journalism Fund?
No, not in terms of what we would publish, but I think that's not what you meant.
Just work, like bureaucracy, just, like writing, yeah, reports.
Yeah. You're dependent on a lot of work before you really start working, so to say. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what's happening, actually. What is good is that, like, talking about, I want to get back a bit to the funding and who takes money from whom. One of the guys who paid our grant is George Soros, who wants to get rid of communism. I don't really necessarily support the opinion, but I never had any interference or anything during our research projects in terms of the outcomes, in terms of what we publish, how we publish it, stuff like that. So I think that's the most important thing. And yeah.
I just started thinking, could there be a business model in making our own funding agencies? I have a good idea, and I rent you, and I say, I hire you, and I say, okay, this is my idea, this is how I would pitch it to an editor, but now it has to go to the funding system, so could you please draft me the papers to apply? Could it work, or is it not important enough, this funding's financial stream? Sorry?
I think it could well work, but probably if you incorporate yourself into the project always and not explicitly, make a business opportunity out of it,
because that wouldn't necessarily agree with the way the funding is supposed to be working. But if you incorporate yourself as a person into these projects and tell them, well, I can get the money for you, you just have to pitch in the the right ideas and the other kind of work, then probably you'd be in a good way.
Well,
if that's ethically the way you want to go, would be another question, though.
Yeah, because there is, of course, the ethics question. You do accept money from... Well, you checked it out. You checked it out to see whether anyone behind this foundation was maybe not very good. I don't think we can get to any conclusions. I mean, you got your money and you were well off with it. One more practical question, Christoph. Did you get enough money to live on and everything? Was it an all-inclusive journalistic trip, or did you have to put on a lot of money yourself? How does it work?
certainly it was not a luxury trip, but I think you can't expect that. China is actually a quite expensive country, actually. I mean, it was okay to live for 3 months, especially when you're young and you don't have...
It's not like volunteering in Africa and paying $500 a week to be able to volunteer there. It was all included. You could live,
basically, it was like a lump sum every month that you had to manage for yourself and decide.
How much?
It was 1,300 euros a month. 350, sorry.
The scholarship they got is on part of the funding that we gave, because part of a lot of program money is we invest is to, you know, have these experts, both from China for the German journalists and from Germany for the Chinese journalists, to understand what is going on in this country, to give them a very basic knowledge of this country. Because most of journalists, for them, don't have...
Well, we understand. Because yeah. You're going to say something about
yes. So the money is actually, they got, is only to cover your own living there. So we give them, like, insurance, we give them the flight, everything, others, next course.
And on that very basic note, I'm going to round it up because Gunther was standing there and he was doing this. Now you know you have to end it. I want a big applause for the two guys who are sitting up there, and I wish you all a very happy drink and everything. Bye.